Now, whether you're with us in the sanctuary or whether you are watching on a screen from somewhere else, know that you are so welcome. You are welcome here regardless of your roots or your heritage, no matter where you've been or where you think you're going. Regardless of your spiritual practices or your lack of spiritual practices, you are always welcome here. You're welcome whatever the color of your skin or whom you love or how you identify your gender, if you do. For it is love that shines from the center of our Unitarian Universalist values. And when I think of that, I especially like to think of the words of Alice Walker, the poet-writer, who said so beautifully, "Love is not concerned with whom you pray or where you spent the night you ran away from home. Love is concerned that the beating of your heart should kill no one." And so, as we light our chalice this morning, let us say together our affirmation. And I guess I will light the chalice this morning since I don't see the child that I thought was going to be here to do that. Oh, well, maybe if a child would like to light the chalice, they can come forward now. And if not, we'll let... Oh, there we go. Avery, thank you, honey. Thank you so much. Let's get ready to light the chalice here. You want a match. And this is how we do things at WOOF. Sometimes they're a little ad lib, and we make the best of it. All right, let us say together our affirmation. Let us be grateful.
Open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
We're going to sing our opening hymn. And we're going to do it as a round. We've got Graham and Spencer going to help.
So we'll do this half of the congregation with me and this other half of the congregation with Spencer. And just sort of dive right
bring
in.
Bring your microphone up, Graham.
Just take a minute to stand up and greet each other. each other. Greet each other and maybe just say a word to the hard part. Settling back down. Time to settle back down. I know that's hard. I know that's hard. But you're going to have lots of time after the service when you go downstairs for coffee to mix and mingle and get to know each other a little bit better. So last week, Reverend Tracy introduced January's theme as stories, with a focus on our own stories and how we choose to tell them. This morning, we are graced with the company of storyteller Will Horniak, who is no stranger to WOOF, but one we haven't seen in a while. The Oregonian has called Will a storyteller par excellence, and those of us who know him couldn't agree more. From Irish myths and Russian fairy tales to Native American legends and Mexican folk tales, Will Horniak weaves a wide web of oral traditions into thoughtful and engaging performances and workshops. We are so lucky to have him with us this morning. Will considers how the oldest myths and legends continue to speak to us in the modern world, offering insights, wisdoms, and strategies for navigating these most difficult times. This morning, we will be reminded that to be human is to sometimes forget the very nature of who we are and what we most love. And through a delicate weave of music, poems, and stories that honor the soul's desire for authenticity, vision, beauty, and connection, we can renew ourselves. We can renew ourselves, and by doing so, help to bring renewal to the world around us. As Joyce Sutphin says in her beautiful poem, Now That Anything Could Happen, you know now that anything can happen. It's hard to know what will. And what will you do now that you know? What words will you say now that you could say anything? What hands will you hold? Whose heart will beat inside you?
Thank you, Betsy. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Izzy, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at WOOF for both adults and children. We've been talking a lot this month about stories, the stories that we tell each other, the stories that we tell ourselves, And one of the stories that I have here at Wolf is that we are a caring community, that we care about we care about each other, and we care about the wider world beyond Wolf. And that care that we take as adults is reflected in our children and who they are and who they're becoming. They not only absorb everything that we do as they're watching us, but they embody the values that we show them. And I'm just constantly impressed and surprised by the kinds of things that they come up with and that they want to do. One of the things that they're doing right now, today, is having a fundraiser to benefit the Oregon Humane Society. Downstairs, after the service, during coffee hour, you'll find a table with dog biscuits that the kids made from scratch. And the money that they're raising, 100% of it will go to the Oregon Humane Society, which was founded by a UU minister named Thomas Lamb Elliott, whose name you might recognize. The kids are carrying on the name and legacy of Dr. Elliott and of Henry Berg and of other UU figures who have come before us and worked so hard to make the world a better place. And now our children are making the world a better place. So please support them downstairs in the coffee room after the service. And now all the kids who want to come up and sit up in the front row to enjoy a story, our speaker today, Will Horniak, is going to read us our Time for All Ages.
Thanks, Susie. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning.
Good to be here. Good to be here. So we have all the children here and then all the inner children back there. Right? If there's anybody that wants to help me up here tell a story, you're welcome to come up if you'd like to. Like to do that?
Yes. Come on.
There are no shy children in this church. So you're going to be there? That's good. Can you be over there too?
Right here? Yeah, okay.
This is an old folk tale from Persia, and they say that long, long, long ago, there was a flock right here of beautiful, graceful, wild pigeons. Can you fly a little bit? They flew through the sky, and they said, ready, can you say this? They said,
we flew high.
We flew high.
And low.
And low.
Across the rivers.
Across the rivers.
Over the mountains.
Over the mountains.
Through the forest.
Through the forest.
But finally, one of the pigeons said,
I'm tired.
Let's rest.
Let's rest.
This one said,
hungry.
I'm hungry.
Let's eat.
Let's eat.
And this pigeon said,
there's a tree.
There's a tree.
Let's land.
Let's land.
Ooh, let's land. They landed at the top of a tall tree. But they looked down through the boughs and the branches of the tree, and they noticed something. And all together they said, ready, can you say this all together?
Hey, look.
And just as they were about to fly down and gobble up the what?
Grain.
It's my way of keeping you awake, okay? As they were about to do that, they heard the sound of a couple tattered old crows in the next tree. Speaks excellent crow. And they said, can you say this together? They said, now, if you don't speak crow, I'll have them translate, okay? Here's what they said.
Pigeons, be careful.
Pigeons, be careful. A hunter puts a grain there.
You fly down.
A net will fall on you.
Ah, but you know, the bright, beautiful pigeons, can you stand up for a second? They shook their heads like this. And they just said to the crows, ready? They said,
you're tattered old crows.
You're tattered old crows.
What do you know?
What do you know?
Enjoying this part there, aren't they?
There's no hunter.
There's no hunter.
There's no net.
There's
I think I'll just sit down and let them take it. They said, there's no net. And they said, and so they flew down and began to gobble up the grain, and it tasted so good, they didn't even notice that there was a hunter, a stealthy hunter, hiding over here in the brush. Here she is now. Hello. And the hunter, she saw the pigeons, and she said,
foolish birds.
Those foolish birds.
Taking my bait.
I'll be eating pigeon stew tonight.
Thinks he's enjoying the part a little too much. So the hunter took the net, and she threw it up into the sky. Up and up it went. The girls, come over this way. Can you come over here? We get the idea. Okay. Hold on for a second. The net, of course, captured the birds, and they were flapping wildly around trying to get free. But they only became and more entangled in the net. And as the hunter came closer to pick up the net, the crows flew down and said, and of course, that means this.
Pigeons, be still.
Pigeons, be still.
If you want to be free.
If you want to be free.
Lift your wings together.
Lift your wings.
Well, this time, the pigeons, they listened to the tattered old crows. And they lifted up their wings like this. You want to help them? Up, 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 up. And then down. And then up, 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 up. And down. And up and down and up and down. And working together, they lifted the net up and up and up and up and up into the sky. And they flew beneath it. And they said, ready?
We're free.
We're free!
Well, the pigeons flew off, and the net came down and landed on the hunter's head. Oh, don't worry. She'll be okay. And the only sound you could hear was the sound of a couple of tattered old crows as they flew off and said,
ha, 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 ha.
And that's the story of hunter, crow, and pigeons. Let's give our actors a hand. Thank you.
All right, now we can stand and form arches along the aisleways, and our children will sing our children back to their classrooms.
As we lean into 2025, first, thank you so much, Will, for getting us started with storytelling. As we lean into 2025, let us take a few minutes now to remind ourselves of all that we are grateful for, starting with those precious children who are so dedicated to the spirit of life and love, for the nature that we are surrounded by, and the community that embraces us as we make our way through this season of cold and dark. While your monetary offerings are an important part of what keeps WOOF happening, it is you and I, it is us that make WOOF WOOF. And as we gratefully receive your offerings this morning, let us consider these words from Alberto Rios, his poem, When Giving is All We Have. I'm going to read this as the offerings are taken by our hosts, if you'll come forward. When giving is all we have, we give because someone gave to us. We give because nobody gave to us. We give because giving has changed us. We give because giving could have changed us. We have been better for it. We have been wounded by it. Giving has many faces. It is loud and quiet, big though small, diamond and wood nails. Its story is old, the plot form. It's warm, and the pages too. But we read this book anyway, over and over again. Giving is, first and every time, hand to hand, mine to yours, yours to mine. You gave me blue, and I gave you yellow. Together, we are simple green. You gave me what you did not have, and I gave you what I had to give. Together, we made something greater from the difference. Let us speak together our affirmation of gratitude in giving.
Let us be grateful when we are able to give, when many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Like stone, the ones our hearts have Once we finally call our own, down where the spirit meets the bone. I'm ending where another story starts. At the edges I can grow, even when they're razor sharp. I'm grateful for the ones that I've marked, for I really knew I'd need them for this part. I'm writing a new ending with a better storyline. Turn the page and leave the blanks with a plot that's less defined. Though I won't get back a day of stolen time, I can go to bed at night with a better storyline.
I hate to have to follow real talent. That was absolutely gorgeous. Thank you so much. We could all use a better storyline. I love that. The Baal Shem Tov, the great teacher of Hasidism in the 18th century, said, when the bonds that connect heaven and earth are strained to the point of breaking, not even prayer can help. Only a story will mend it. Good words to consider. A reading from Michael Mead. Michael Mead is a brilliant and incredibly dedicated and courageous mythologist, storyteller, a man of ritual and poetry. For years and years and years, he has worked with at-risk youth. He's worked in prisons. He's worked with returning vets from Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq. And his words these days are incredibly valuable, deeply grounded, and very inspiring. This is a reading from one of his recent writings called Finding Ways to Begin Anew. Although there can be no quick fix for all the troubles the world at this time, the aim of traditional New Year rites was to end the reign of the old year in order to begin everything anew. The idea was to follow the course of nature, in which the world descends into darkness before the light and the energy of life begin to return. The old idea was not simply the turning over of a calendar page, but the understanding that a capacity for transformation and regeneration resides at the heart of nature, at the center of the cosmos, and in the heart of humanity as well. The point was not to be naive and deny the problems that must be faced, but to return to the origins of creation and symbolically participate in the capacity of life to renew itself. For as small and insignificant as we may increasingly feel, we carry within our souls a spark that is connected to the galaxies and to the origins of creation. On one hand, we are time-bound. On the other, we are secretly tied to eternal things that transcend the limits of time and space. By symbolically participating in the dissolution of time, ancient people were temporarily delivered from their faults and failings, and they had their original life potential restored. Finding Ways to Begin Anew, Michael Mead.
Thank you, Will. And always thank you to Michael Mead. If you're not familiar with him, please do some Googling. So to be present in the world, we must be able to hold both the joy and the beauty and the sorrow and the pain of it all. And there is so much of each. Now is the time in our service that we take a few minutes to recognize and acknowledge our joys and sorrows and to surrender them to the gentle water of community by symbolically placing whatever we may be feeling in our hearts into a stone and letting the water absorb it. So as is our tradition, I'm going to stand down with the microphone, and anyone who is inclined to want to share a joy and sorrow or whatever is on their heart with this community, now would be the time to come forward and pick a stone, put it into the water. And if you'd like to do that silently, you are welcome. If you would like to speak a word or two, you are welcome to do that. So let's come this aisle and around.
Feeling joy for passing a major professional designation this week.
A member of my chalice group named Elaine is fighting a new diagnosis of cancer, and she has asked the congregation to hold her in your thoughts and prayers.
Fires destroying neighborhoods is sad, but generally kind of an abstract feeling until you know the people. And my friends and their animals are physically safe, but their house is gone.
I have great joy that last weekend I was able to have my daughter and my stepson back together again for the first time in 5 years. And they're just so valuable to each other and to me.
Both my kids are in the heart of Los Angeles trying to start their lives. They're safe, I'm glad. I'm rigid with anxiety. And, you know,
I'm here to tell you I'm thankful that when one window closes, another one always opens. You just have to look for it.
Our stepmother of 40 plus years is now in hospice.
I'm concerned about my nephew who's thousands of miles away right now, but I'm trying to be there for him during this time.
Driving down Olson Road this morning, I saw a homeless elderly couple, and I assumed they were all homeless.
Grateful for James, grateful for Kenzer, grateful to be here from Minneapolis. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. And this one last stone for all those who are suffering, who are in pain, all of those who are struggling to find their home and their voice in the world.
So this song is number 1011 in the Teal Hymnal. And again, we'll do it as a round with Spencer leading the second part. Can you get it up?
Return again, return to the home of your soul. Return again, return to the home of your soul.
Stories. I know that's a surprise to all of you that speak to this theme of the holy longing, the desire in all of us for rebirth and renewal. And the first story is one familiar to us all. It's told a lot this time of year. It's the story about the three wise men who see a distant star and they follow it. And I always think it's kind of interesting. We call them wise men now, right? But who knows what their friends and family called them back then. You know? Yeah, we saw this star, you know, and we think we're just going to split and follow it. And yeah, that sounds wise to us. Sure. Good. Yeah. Where are you going? Well, we don't know. When are you coming back? Well, we're really not sure. Okay. Yeah. This is not exactly the seven habits of highly effective people. So I wrote a little poem in honor of that that journey, which in time has become something that is inspiring and is very grounded, but took a lot of courage at the time, I think. The three wise men maybe were not considered wise, or even in possession of all of their senses at first. For men who suddenly depart from friends and family, lucrative enterprises, positions of power and plush thrones, for long camel rides of indeterminate distance and duration over foreign and forbidding terrain, by the dark of night in the dead of winter, drawn by a distant star, are seldom considered wise. Mad, foolish, yes, wise, not likely. And yet wisdom is distilled slowly, drop by drop, over time, not manufactured overnight. And now, ages hence, we can drink that intoxicating liquor, brewed from a courageous, long, plodding, humble pilgrimage, made by men bearing gifts in the darkness, to where and for whom they knew not. They knew only to leave all they knew for a long night journey toward a beckoning star. They knew only to leave all they knew for a long night journey toward a beckoning star. So I think that speaks a little bit to this idea of the holy longing that we all know within inside of us. And yet it takes something to do it. Because there's all what I call a secret border patrol agent inside of us. You know? That when we come across this idea for a holy longing, it says, wait a minute, where are you going? What are you doing? When are you going to be back? Right? But the common thing about this holy longing is that it seems that no matter where it is or who we are, we all need to depart the familiar to find this place of rebirth and renewal. Maybe it's not a three-month-long camel ride in the desert. But we need to depart maybe a familiar community, maybe a familiar feeling, maybe a familiar intellectual stance to find this place. The great African teacher Maladoma Somé from Burkina Faso, he said, you cannot change this world. You cannot improve this world if you always stay in this world. You have to get to the other world. You have to get it. Well, how do you do that? Well, Burkina Faso, they have a saying, every day sing, every day dance, every day tell stories, and every day be silent. These are thresholds into the realm of imagination. These are the thresholds into the eternal world. And this is what Mead talks a little bit about in the reading. When we find that place, we find that it touches the eternal, the timeless inside of ourselves. And when we have that, we can come back into this regular world, the horizontal world, and bring new energy, new ideas, fresh vitality. Now, Maladoma Somé talks about we live in what's called the horizontal world, the north, south, east, and west of our lives. We just call it the world, right? You know, it's the mortgage, the leaky faucet, our jobs, our relationships, all that. But he said that unless we ascend up into the vertical world towards spirit, and descend down into soul, we can get exhausted by this horizontal world. Anybody ever feel exhausted? Especially these days? And so we have lots of ways of doing it. Of course, the arts are one. One of the reasons we tell stories is we say once upon a, which immediately ushers us across the threshold into a different realm. It's one of the reasons why stories and storytelling have been used forever by cultures, to enter the realm of imagination, to think anew, to be refreshed, and to bring those gifts back into this world. There's two ways of going into the vertical world, of getting beyond the horizontal world. One is what the wise men do. They ascend towards spirit. They see the bright light. It's a journey of expectation, of light, of rebirth, and renewal. The other way is the descent into soul, into the replenishing darkness of the world, too. Both of those are journeys into the eternal, into the all that is. But here's a little story of a story of descent, not ascent. And it's told in the Inuit tradition. It's a long story. I'll just give you sort of the gist of it. But the Inuit say that there was a village, and in the village there was a woman, a young woman, and she was a little weary of the horizontal world of her village, where life was quite circumscribed. And every day she would go to the edge of the village, and she would look out into this vast tundra. And she just longed for something different. She didn't even know what it was. She just longed for some type of change. And the great storyteller Robert Bly once said, when you take one step in the direction of your soul's longing, it awakens something on the other side that takes three steps towards you. And I love that idea, that there are allies for us, invisible allies that we won't even meet until we take that step towards our greatest longing. Well, she does. She goes out every day to the edge of the village, and she looks, and one day, sure enough, something comes from the other side. She sees this figure walking across the tundra way in the distance. And as the figure comes closer, she can see that it's a hunter. And as he comes closer, she can see he's wearing a polar bear skin. He's a rather successful hunter. He has polar bear teeth around his neck. He has sharp knives that he carries. Now, a hunter is a very interesting metaphorical character in Inuit stories. Because, of course, a hunter has to be in touch with the totem animals, the spirit animals that he hunts. So he's always connected to the other side, as well as being very practical. Also, a hunter can be extremely dangerous because they know about killing. And so he comes into the village, and this woman is quite taken with him, because not only can he hunt, but in the evenings he sings the songs, he speaks the poems, and she says to him one day, take me hunting with you when you go. And he says, I don't think you understand here. Where I hunt, I travel very quickly. And she said, I'm strong. I can travel with you. And I can be useful, too. He says, you don't understand. Where I go, it's very dangerous. Sometimes people don't even return. And she said, that is the kind of journey I want to take. She just knew that she longed for something different. And so, indeed, she went with him. And they went out across the tundra. And indeed, she had to run to keep up with them. They went onto the ice floes, which is where the seal and the bear are plentiful. And one day, the two of them came to the edge of the ice. It was just water. And then another ice floe 100 yards beyond it. He didn't even hesitate. He just poosh, dove into the water. Swam across, pulled himself out, and he beckoned to her. She wanted to be there with him, but she didn't want to die. And she didn't know if she could make this swim. And then she began to reason. She began to think, what am I doing here? Ever been there? What am I doing here? I have friends. I have family. I have people that love me. I have a village, a community that I came from. What am I doing here? And she reasoned this and she reasoned that. But you see, that woman there was a lot like all of us here, not always entirely reasonable. You know. And so she dove into the water. And she swam across. But she tried to pull herself out, and she couldn't because her hands were numb. And she was flailing around, trying to pull herself up, and she cried out for help. But when she looked up, she could see that this man was really no man. That polar bear skin was his skin, in fact. The teeth around his neck were in his mouth. The sharp knives were his claws. He was a polar bear. And one time I told the story, and a woman came up after, and she said, you know, I've been there. He looked so good at the bar. And then we got home, and it was a little different. anyway, this huge polar bear, he roars and roars and roars, this earth ear-shattering roar, and then gets down on all fours and lumbers off, and he's gone. And this woman, she cannot pull herself out. And finally, she has to let go, and she drifts down to the bottom there of the sea. It's a big tidal river. And she's there in the dark, in the cold, for a long time. And as will happen, as the tides come in, the big crabs come with it. And they find the flesh of this young woman. And they chew and they peck and they pull, as the crabs will do. And after a while, she's nothing more than a skeleton woman. And barnacles grow on her bones and kelpweed wraps around her ribs. She's there for a long time. But one day, as sometimes will happen, the tide washes in so strongly this way, and the rain falls, and the rivers wash strongly this way, and it creates a big whirlpool. And in so doing, it lifts the skeleton woman up and up and up, and her arms are flailing about, and she finds one of the ice floes there. Well, she's lost a lot of weight, you know, so it's easy for her to lift herself up, and now she goes walking across this ice floe, you know. And her wild hair is streaming in the wind, and the kelpweed wrapped around her ribs is flailing behind her, and her bones are clicking and clacking and rattling. And she comes onto the tundra, and she sees the frame of an old hut, which is actually made from the ribs of a whale. Because sometimes will happen, the whales will die, and the tide will wash them up onto these stream beds, and the hunters take them, and they use the ribs to make the hut, the frame of a hut. Well, this was just a frame. All the grasses were gone, but she was skillful, this woman. And she wove the grasses around the frame, and just as winter came, she went into the hut. She was rather tired, and she went to sleep for a long time, all winter long. But in the darkness, she dreamed, and in the darkness, she slept, and she woke up to warm air. She woke up to bird song. She woke up to spring. And she woke up thinking, perhaps this is all a dream. And she threw open the flap of the hut, and the light came in, but she was still nothing more than bones. She stayed there for some time, and one day, skeleton woman, she saw two young men, two hunters. They were coming not far away. She called them, and she said, come in, come in. Hello, hello, come in. I will feed you. Well, when you're hunting on the tundra and somebody asks you to come in for food, what do you say? You don't know when you'll eat again. And these two young men, they came towards the hut, and out came Skeleton Woman with a couple of pieces of salmon. She said, here! And they went, ah! They were young men. They were terrified. They ran back to their village. And that night their father, who was an Anjakok, a healer, medicine man, a shaman, he said, what happened to the two of you? You haven't spoken all day. Did you see a ghost or something? They said, oh, father, we saw something much stranger than a ghost. There was a woman there. She was nothing more than bones, a skeleton. She offered us food. And he said, truly, that is the kind of woman I would like to meet. And that night he took down his frame drum, and he warmed it over the fire to tighten the skin. And all night long he was chanting and playing upon this drum. And at first light he left the hut, and he began to walk. And sometimes Inuit people will do this when they're walking, they're drumming. Because the rhythm of the drumming helps the walking. And he was walking, drumming. And way in the distance, she could feel that drumming in her very bones. And he finally came to the hut, and he said, hello? Hello in there? And she said, go away! Nothing more than a skeleton. And he said, I know, that's why I came. She said, go away, you won't like what you see. I'm an old man. You probably won't like what you see either. Those things don't matter to me anymore. Open up. It took everything for him to do this, but she did. She opened up the flap. She stood before him just as she was, a skeleton. He didn't care. They went in and they sat down, and words came easily between the two of them. They talked for a long time. She told him the whole story of how she became the skeleton woman. And he told her his story of how his wife had died giving birth to these two sons. And they talked for a long time. And then finally he said, you know, I have this drum, and sometimes I play it and people dance. And maybe it was because it was in the dark, she began to just move, and she remembered how beautifully she once danced. And he kept playing, and she kept dancing for all that day, and all the next day she danced and danced and danced. And then one day he threw open the flap of the hut, and in came the light, and all the flesh was back on her bones. Her hair was long and shining, and her eyes were bright. And she said, "Hey, give me that drum. You dance now." And he said, "You know, I'm an old man. I really don't dance any longer." And she said, "Dance." And so he danced, and the two of them danced. They danced from that little hut all the way back to his village, where the Inuit say they are dancing to this day, through death back into birth, through death back into birth, through death back into birth. And they also say that when you play a frame drum like that, what you really hear are those two dancing inside of it. I don't know. I'm just a storyteller. But that's what the Inuit say, and if they don't know, well, who does? Let's thank the Inuit for that story. Could you grab that book for me, Celine? It's my shameless advertisement time. I wrote a book of poetry called This Altar of Earth and Sky, and I'm going to be downstairs peddling it. But I wanted to read you a very short poem, also in response to the three wise men, because I do believe that sometimes I ask myself, what would it be like if the three wise men were walking around today? And this one's called Wise Men Detained at Border. Three wise men of Middle Eastern descent, mounted on camels, speaking an archaic language, garbed in BCE-era clothing, traveling primarily by night, have been detained for search and questioning by U.S. Federal Border Patrol agents. Bearing alleged gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, confiscated by customs officials, and claiming to be, quote, from afar, the three concocted an elaborate story based on vague spiritual grounds, attempting to gain entry into the United States, according to Chief Border Patrol Officer Delmore Hobbs. Quote, their elaborate dress, vague motives for travel, antiquated modes of speech lead us to believe this is a new breed of terrorist infiltrator. We suspect they're part of a larger operation. As our border security tightens, the bad guys are getting smarter and more creative, Hobbs said. The three spoke to officials of the Star as a light for rekindling a new vision for humanity and a flame of love that would burn away the choking brush of indifference, greed, hatred, and cruelty. The three concluded that beneath the transforming light of the Star, awakened minds and unfettered hearts would commit countless acts of courage, beauty, and kindness to be carried on the winds of spirit and cast like a billion seeds of hope and healing upon the fertile ground and deep furrows of human hearts everywhere. Officer Harbs stated the three men would be spending Christmas as guests of Uncle Sam in an 8-by-12-foot cell and not spouting any more terrorist nonsense anytime soon. He added that the alleged wise men wished a peaceful and blessed season to all and begged forgiveness that their gifts would arrive late as a result of their detainment. Three wise men detained at the U.S. border. I want to thank all of you for the invitation to me to present a program today. And we have a few minutes for conversation, some questions.
We will actually, we will have several minutes downstairs after the close of our service for questions and answers and conversation with Will, who is, as you can see, an extraordinary, extraordinary storyteller. Thank you. I will close our time together here in the sanctuary. I have a different idea. How about after we go down and get our coffee, we bring it back up here and we let Will chat with us? Anybody interested in that? Yes? Okay, let's give that a try. But as we leave the sanctuary this morning, let us leave with the, oh my goodness, Yesse Barnwell. Dr. Yesse Barnwell, do you know that name? Anybody?
Yes.
Yes. Caleb, you're going to put it up on the screen now. And we are going to sing along with Dr. Barnwell and the...
For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreamings, and we are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage, fathers of time, daughters of dust, and the sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, lovers of light, and the builders of nations. We're seekers of truth, keepers of faith, makers of peace, and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers, we are our grandfather's dreamings, and we are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage, fathers of time, daughters of dust, and the sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, lovers of light, and the builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith. We are makers of peace and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreamings, and we are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are one.
So we extinguish our chalice this morning, but not the light, not the light and the community that it lights. Let us sing together as we leave the sanctuary our song of parting. Please join us downstairs for coffee, conversation, and perhaps you'd like to take a look at this altar of earth and sky. And if you'd like, come back up for conversation.